Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Martin, and I'm very happy to have you with me today as I bring you part two of my lengthy and in-depth conversation with Sarah Napick. Part one was available last week. If you haven't heard it, you might want to go back and listen to that before you listen to this one, because we had a long interview, and then we had an additional interview, and I split it up into two roughly even sides of the conversation. So bringing you part two this week. And as I mentioned last week, I'm actually recording this and uploading it immediately after having recorded and uploaded last week's episode. So I don't have any new news for you this week, no announcements or anybody to thank or anything like that. But I will remind you that this is a listener-supported podcast sometimes. And so if you feel like supporting the podcast, please stop by my personal webpage at martinball.net. You can use the PayPal link at the top right of the page, or you can link on over to my Patreon page, which is patreon.com/martinwball. And there are a variety of different levels and tiers over there with increasing access and bonuses and gifts and all that good stuff. Everything from $1 a month up to $100 a month. And at the $100 level, you also get a 1 hour monthly video call and consultation with me. And who knows, if you do that, you eventually might end up like Sarah, who originally came to me as an integration client and is now the featured guest on my podcast. So you never know what's going to happen. And of course, if you would like to arrange a 30 or 60 or 90 minute call with me, I'm happy to set that up with you. You can visit my integration website page at nondualentheogenicintegration.com if you would like more information. You can also just shoot me an email at martinwball@gmail.com and we will set up a time that we can talk. And as I like to say, I always look forward to my integration calls with people every week. It's like I get to travel all around the world because there's people from all over the place that, you know, the need for integration is not confined to any particular demographic or geographic region. It's all around the world and always happy to speak with people wherever they're at and whatever their needs may be. And it's a great pleasure for me to do so. Next week here on the podcast, we will be continuing on with chapters from the audiobook from Facilitating 5-MeO-DMT, an Anthology of Approaches to Serving the God Molecule. Of course, if you are impatient and don't want to wait, the full audiobook is available over there at Audible, Amazon, the iBook Store. It's also available in paperback and in ebook, and at my relatively brand new shop over at Patreon, again, patreon.com/martinwball. The Facilitating 5-MeO-DMT Anthology, along with many of my other books, are available for PDF download. And as I've mentioned, one of the advantages to that is I include a lot of my original art in many of my books. And in the PDFs, you get full color copies of all the art, which is kind of cool, because sometimes if you're reading on an e-reader, it's just a black and white e-reader, and you don't get to see the cool colors. And I like the colors. And of course, the books themselves are printed in black and white. So it's a great way to enjoy the art if you want. Okay, that's all the announcements I have for today. So let's go ahead and get into part two of my conversation with Sarah Napick. Really appreciated getting this chance to speak with Sarah, to ask her all these questions and to get into all these topics. I hope that you're enjoying the conversation. And thanks for tuning in for part two. So without any further ado, let's get back into it with Sarah. So you developed your practice and you came to me and started sharing stuff with me. And we were talking about what was going on with you. And I'm curious, do you want to share any of sort of the energetic stuff that was happening with you?
Yeah, I'll share it. Sure. I mean, I just want to preface like why I came to you, mm-hmm. You know, like, I had a great teacher in Mexico. He was there to support me when I needed, but he's super busy. He would get back to me when I had little questions about things that needed to be answered. But like, I was just looking for a deeper level of support, like someone who could support me as a facilitator, you know? And also that I knew something was missing from my own practice with the medicine, and that like, I was not a full embodiment yet of what I was being taught from the medicine of that I am God and that I was still controlling and I wasn't fully in the flow. Like, yes, more so than before, especially after I went to the training and continued with my practice. But like, I knew I wasn't where I wanted to be yet. And I think that like when I found you, that was like exactly what I said to you. It was like, how do I embody all this work that I've done? Yeah. And through our conversations, you taught me the symmetrical dance practice, which I still do all the time. Awesome. Of moving the hands together in symmetry to create sacred geometry. And once I started that practice, I started convulsing a lot.
Yeah.
My first, like, that was in November, I remember. I was sitting on my couch and like my body started shaking. I'm like, what's going on? So I laid down on the floor. I'm like, am I having a seizure? I'm like, everything's fine. Let me just flow with it. And I just sat there for like a good hour and a half at least and convulsed for the very first of many convulsing sessions. And through that convulsion, like this big energy of love ended up opening up, but it took a long time. I had to get in the bath. I was like, when's this going to end? Like, I know it has to run its course through. And I was like, I got to talk to Martin again. And then when we talked, I was like, I realized like we were connected right before, like that all was all perfectly timed because like you were the only one who could probably understand the convulsions because you had been through that yourself.
Yeah.
Is nobody else that I knew, even though I knew a lot of people doing medicine, no one had done anything like I had done with the toad yet. And I had nobody that could talk to me about what was happening with the convulsions really, except for you.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I was able to be there for you.
Yeah, me too. It was definitely helpful to be like, okay, this is just energy running its course. And I mean, gosh, when did I go back to Mexico? March, November, December, January, February, March. 5 months of convulsions I went through. Like anytime my body would relax, I would start convulsing and try to just get to the ground. And it got to the point like every single day I had to get myself into a place like before I pick my kids up for school or whatever to convulse.
Yeah.
Because my body had to move this energy through. And often I would dance too. I would dance and then I would definitely convulse if I dance. But a lot of times I would do the convulsions anyway, which was just like the spine undulating. A lot of times like the neck picking up really high off the ground. And then I started working with different sounds like I would when I'd serve and you're trying to get someone to come back or energy to move and starting to use these different clicking sounds and little noises that I would make during the process to help move the energy along. And yeah, that was a doozy working through that. And like if I would go and do ayahuasca or huachuma, which I wasn't doing a lot of anymore, I would just spend the whole time convulsing and like jaw chattering.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was intense, but also I was like, I know this is good for me. Like the average person is going to be like, what is going on? But like, I'm not the average person. And I'm like, I know I can handle this, you know, and I'm going to let it ride through.
Yeah. And that's the whole energetic reconditioning that's taking place. And that's even when we're not necessarily dealing with specific traumas, specific blocks. We're not dealing with patterns. We're not dealing with baggage from the past. This is where this reconditioning is now looking to inhabit your being and inhabit your body. And it needs to condition the vehicle. Mm-hmm. And it goes through these periods. And the mind can ride on top and say, well, I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's causing this. I mean, it's so different than the personal content, right? Of like, oh yeah, there's that block. There's that belief. But now it's like, there's something happening in my body here and I don't know what this is. So it can be very disconcerting.
It's completely uncontrollable.
Yeah.
And intense. I mean, I can't imagine what would happen if I tried to stop it. I mean, it would have been extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. It had to do what it had to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you worked yourself through that and things eventually smoothed out for you.
They did smooth out. Yeah. Occasionally, if things are a little crinked, it'll be a quick one. And it'll go right back. Yeah. So kind of on the tail end of the convulsions, I'm like, okay, I've been doing this embodiment work. Like I'm still just, I'm fully missing the one piece of the puzzle. Like I'm gonna go back to Mexico and work with my teacher again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a pivotal breakthrough for me. And he like made a joke a couple days in. He's like, you just came back for a little maintenance, huh? I'm like, I'm back, aren't I? I knew I'm missing something. And yeah, it was interesting during that experience because but during that second time back in Mexico, like it was beautiful to receive the reflections from him of how much work I had done and how different I held my energy and like I should be so proud of myself and just to get to hear that from a male person, because my dad never gave me any approval or any positive feedback ever. It just was like so nourishing for me for him to say, like, I'm so proud of you, you know? And I went back kind of thinking, like, did I need this additional training or did I need this? And thinking like I needed some extra trainings to be more credible. And he was like, why are you still looking outside of yourself? Like, you can go to this training, that training, that training. Like everything comes from God. Like you're looking for problems still.
Yeah.
There's no problems. You're already there. You're like, what are you missing, Sarah? And I'm like, what? And yeah, I would feel like during that time period of working with the toad, like yeah, right. We felt it. Everything's there, all the love. And I come out and it's like, but that's still not shifting for me. What's not shifting? I couldn't get it. And we kind of just got to this moment and he's like, I went into a huge convulsion there. And he was like, okay, we're going to take a break with you.
Yeah.
And then we got to this place. He's like, the toad's gotten you as far as the toad's going to get you. We need to go another route with you. And he's like, we're sitting with psilocybin. And I was like, oh shit. Like, toad, no problem. Psilocybin, And yeah, we sat together and I did 8 grams of psilocybin in like increments, 4 and then 2 and then 2. And he sat right with me. He did psilocybin with me and we went through my stuff together. And it was a lot of the stuff I've already mentioned. I wanted to feel special and important. I felt unlovable and like I didn't, like I was unlovable. And that was a story I ran in all my relationships. And then we just got to the main block and it was like, I didn't feel safe and I didn't feel loved. And this is blocking me from being exactly who I am and blocking my channel from God. And in that moment, it was like, I saw this choice of giving up my free will to merge completely with God or not. And I was like a little, and he's like watching me, like, what are you gonna pick? I'm still seeing you in resistance. I'm like, we know what I'm gonna pick. Just let me work through what I'm working through here. And like, I saw it all clear for the first time was like, oh my God, the story and the ego takes us out of the present moments and creates a separation from something that's always here. And I was like, oh, what? And yeah, everything shifted after that. I was like the first time my mind had ever been clear in my life, like completely clear with no thoughts. And I was like, what? What's this? He's like, welcome to presence. I'm
Yeah.
like, this is amazing.
Yeah, well, I love that you shared that. It's such a hard thing for the ego to grasp because, again, I think there's a lot of spiritual storytelling. You know, we talk a lot about transformation, but it's kind of more that it's this stripping away and then just becoming available for what already is. That people talk about ascending, raising their vibration, raising their energy, quantum shifting. Like everyone's trying to go somewhere. And they
Right,
think, well,
it's true.
as soon as I get to the place where I'm trying to get to, then
Right.
everything's going to be perfect because I will have perfected and optimized myself. But it's actually more this stripping away. It's like, stop
Yes.
avoiding just being here because here is where it actually all is. And getting rid of this notion of ascending, transforming, raising our consciousness, raising our, I mean, there's so many different verbal formulations that we have that always imply it's somewhere else. It's something
It is.
else. It's not you. It's not here. But that's the lie.
That's the lie. And that was a pivotal moment when I realized that we're heaven is on earth in this moment. It's not a place to try to get to. It's here already. And are you willing to drop your bullshit to enjoy your life? Or do you want to stay in a perpetual cycle of suffering with your stories? Yeah. And it's your choice. It just comes to awareness and then a choice.
Yeah.
And then whatever the work to heal and stuff. But yeah.
Yeah. And this is where entheogens work as very powerful tools within this process. But I think it also kind of points back to the truth that, well, no medicine is really necessary because it is all right here, right now. And that these are tools. But if even leaning too heavily on the medicine, like, oh, I got to go back and take more medicine. Oh, I got to go take more medicine. Oh, I got to serve more medicine. I've got to, you know, that becomes its own thing in a way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So maybe we could transition into that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think like that I might have been one of the, I was one of those people of like, but let's do more medicine. Often and was modeled using a lot of a lot of medicine from my teacher and adopted that model for myself. And you know, yeah, there's so many things to say right now. Let me just, reformulate for a second. Like coming home from that second trip to Mexico, like I wanted to dive in deeper to the medicine,
yeah.
Right? Like I had my insight from that trip was that I was now coming home to open up my own Bufo Church.
Yeah.
And that I had the name in my heart for a long time. And, you know, and there's so much energy going at this time. And like my reflections from my friends are like, you're clearer than you've ever been. Like, you know, I can see how much your energy has shifted, just like really positive. So I'm flowing with it. I'm still serving the medicine at this point, and I'm getting to this place with the medicine, working with it on my own that I can like ask these questions. And like, before I get the answer, I already know the answer in my body. And I remember coming to you, I'm like, who am I talking to? Like, is it God? Is it my higher self? Like, you know, and it's just like this guide that's there. And I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm like in this training period to open this church because the church can only come from God. This is the only way to formulate it, you know? And like in this moment, I discover that my house has mold for the second time in a year and a half. And I go and work with the medicine and like pray for a miracle of like, how am I going to get a new house? Like, what is the plan here? Because I had like no income on the books. And like not a lot of money in the bank in that moment from doing the work I had done the year prior and closing my business down. And like through that work or that praying for the miracle, my mind had concocted its own miracle. And this was where like I got into illusion. Hmm. Do you want to talk about this now?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, during this time period, I had like ramped up my personal practice now, like, you know, and I just witnessed this and I'm not blaming or anything. I take full responsibility for the way that I worked with this medicine, but I would do like pipe after pipe and work with it. And then like by the end, the medicine's like no more. And I would put it down. And before I would go back to it, I would check in, like, is it okay? And it would, yes, it's okay. And then I'd go back and it'd be again, no more. So like these like little things of no were starting to happen. Plus the reflection of my teacher saying, Bufo's taking you as far as it's going to take you. Mm-hmm. So I call him. I'm like freaking out. Like, what am I going to do? I've got to get my family out. I don't know what to do financially right now. And he's like, go pray for a miracle. Sit with the medicine. So that's what I did. And like in this process, right, because I'm microdosing, which I think is important to mention on my own, that I'm not going into full processes, so my ego is still present. And I concocted this idea that I was going to get like this huge lump sum of money and buy a house in the Oakland Hills that's going to be the home for the church. And that was what was happening for me. I thought that was 100% happening and it felt extremely real. And my work was to be in preparation for that coming. And I also received the message or concocted the message to get rid of all of my stuff in my house. And like, I know part of that was like fear of the mycotoxins from the mold literally spread to everything. So I didn't want to move to a new home and then bring stuff from the old house with me. Yeah. So I spent the next time period without knowing where I was going to move, what was going to happen with the money. I had no clue what was coming down the pipeline. I just was like, my first step is to clean out my house and get rid of everything. So that's what I started doing. I started cleaning out my stuff and donating it. And like, I had to like have special people come in for really special sacred items, like an eagle fan, a chinupa, like things that were really dear to me that was very challenging to part with. And I was like, I felt like I'm showing God how much I trust this plan with zero attachment of this current life, like what it's about to shift. And I'm willing to let everything go to create something new. And it was hard. There were some things that were really challenging to get rid of. And so I got rid of everything. And we, like, my friends came in and we did these massive Goodwill runs. And, like, everyone took so much of my stuff, like, because it was great stuff. And it was beautiful to see how it got passed along to just the right people and just sweet, you know? And, my thought at that time was like, I think I might need to go back to Peru to replace some of this stuff. And that was like the first moment of Peru coming into my head. And then I decided to go work with the medicine. And I'm like, now I'm in an Airbnb, the second Airbnb at this point. And I work with the medicine and it's like, you're going to Peru like now. And I'm like, now, how can I go now? And I like look at my calendar, like when are my kids out of town next? And kind of like, I could go at the end of the month, and this is like the beginning of the month or so, or I don't know, about a month away. And then the next day I see my co-parent and he says, why don't I hold on to the kids for a couple of weeks while you resettle? And I'm like, whoa, I'm going to Peru now. Like, oh, okay. And like, I'm still in that space with the direction and the voice being extremely clear. And like that next, it was 8 days later, I fly to Peru. Everything just got really clear. It's like, got out the map, looked at the map, and I'm like, where am I going in Peru? And I pointed at each place. And then I got down to Iquitos. Yeah, that's where you're going. It's book a one-way ticket. I'm like, okay, what am I doing in Peru? But like, it was like one step at a time, right? Book the ticket. Then it's like, okay, what am I doing in Peru? Dieta. I'm like, okay, but I'm not working with ayahuasca anymore. How do I find what am I even looking for? You know? And I'd wanted to heal from the mold for a long time. This was the second time of having mold in the house for a year. And like during this time period, I'd had this really brutal infection on two of my fingers where like right at the cuticle, it would swell and get really red and then like burst open with pus and bleed. And I had been on like multiple rounds of antibiotics. I'd done combo many times. I tried different creams and it wouldn't heal. And I'm like, I need to heal because I can't be running a church and serving medicine sick. So I find a woman in Peru and she does like tobacco diets. And I set up a call with her and she's like, I can help you. So now I know where I'm going in Peru. I booked the ticket. Now I know I'm going on this diet. And yeah, everything just lined up pretty perfect after that. I'm on a hike. I meet someone. She ends up watching my dog while I'm gone. Like everything just was perfect. Get myself to Peru. And she does her assessment on me. And the next day she's like, we'll start your medicine. I'm like, okay. And like she's going, there's three people there in her center. She goes to their rooms and serves them their medicine. But she comes to me and says, we're going to work downstairs. And I'm like, I wonder why. And we go downstairs and she says, so listen, your blood is poisoned. And you're going to be drinking a mixture of bitter salt and tobacco with 5 liters of water to clean your blood out. And I'm like, my blood is poisoned? She's like, we'll talk about it later. I'm like, okay. And I drink the mixture of the bitter salt with the tobacco and the 5 liters of water. And you can imagine it's extreme purging out of both ends and very challenging. And the diet to like you're alone in isolation for a week on very little food. You drink like a juice in the morning of papaya and banana. And in the afternoon, you eat a soup with no salt in it and vegetables. And that is your food. So the second day into the diet, I'm like, I want to know why my blood is poisoned. Like, is it the mold? I'm like, is it a heartbreak? Like, what is it?
Yeah.
And I go to her and she's like, are you ready to talk about it? I'm like, yes. And she's like, well, what have you been doing like these last couple of years? And I'm like, I'm gonna tell, she knows, but she doesn't fully know. And I tell her I've been doing the toad and I did a lot of combo for the mold and plus the mold in the house. And she says, the toad has poisoned your blood.
Yeah.
And I look at her like, wait, how could that be? What? And she goes, it's poison, isn't it? I'm like, yeah, but it's medicine. Well, but it's poison, isn't it? She's like, the facts are just very obvious. Like, you're ingesting like large amounts of toad poison. Your fingers are super swollen. The poison's trying to get out of your body. It keeps bursting open over and over again. It's not healing. Nothing's healing it. Like, it's just really obvious. And I'm like crying. Like, you don't understand. I'm about to open this church. Like, this is my life's work. It's medicine. I don't understand. You know, how could she? Well, then how did it do this to you? And she also says, and you're in a lot of illusion. And I'm like, what? Me? I'm like, I feel really clear. And she's like, you're in a lot of illusion. And I'm like, huh. So she's like, why don't you go sit with this? Pray for truth. Okay. So I go to my room and I'm like, what the fuck? And yeah, everything came in as truth. Yeah, you're done with the toad. The toad has poisoned your blood. And you're gonna stay here for the rest of your time in Peru. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So I'm like, okay, I could see it. This is a gift from the toad. It's brought me here. And in that moment, she's like, I can tell it's in your spirit. Like, it's in your spirit to be a healer. And she said, I want to offer you an apprenticeship to be a tobacco curandera, an apprenticeship under me. Like, it's very long. It just takes as long as it takes. And you can still help people. We're just switching your tool here.
Yeah.
So yeah, when I went to my room and prayed about all that, I was like, okay, I remember like journaling with my colored pencils and my markers. Like, I'm not in this such a bad place yet. Of like, all right, maybe this was a gift and this is where I was supposed to get to. And then I like totally like had a freak out after that and was wondering if I was just being tested and sent to her, you know, to see how bad I really wanted this church and like all these messages from Bufo things are coming in from my life in the States, and I got really confused. And we talked through it all, and I saw where I was an illusion. And in that moment, I was like, "Yeah, I'm gonna stay and do another diet, and I'm gonna start my apprenticeship with the tobacco curandera." And this is the end of my journey with this part of the toad medicine.
Yeah. Very powerful. Very powerful to share all of that, Sarah. Thank you so much. And so, if we could just put a little assessment on it, that we could say, just notice the difference between just that really strong command of pray for the truth versus what the ego tends to do is, what am I supposed to do? What's the right decision? Well, who am I supposed to be? Right? So these are all questions that are asking for meaning, for purpose, for identity. But that quest for truth, that's something different. And like even it inspired me just to grab my copy of Entheogenic Liberation over here. And one of the things that I write in the preface of the book, actually in the introduction, I say, if you're not committed to truth above all things, then this isn't for you.
Yes.
And that really is the heart of it, isn't it? That it's not about serving medicine or not serving medicine. It's not about what is the right medicine or the wrong medicine. And it's not about what is the right way or what is the wrong way. It comes down to, well, what's true?
Yeah.
And can I live and embody that?
Right.
And often it's not the stories that we're telling ourselves of what we want to be true or what we're expecting to be true or what we think our meaning or our purpose or our calling is. Because if there's a calling, it's pretty much always the ego making that up.
That's such a good point. Yeah, I mean, I saw that I got my miracle and it looked nothing like I thought it would.
Yeah.
How could I ever? You have to stay very open to see, right? And I think all this work with medicines and healing comes down to truth. Otherwise, you're in a story or you're an illusion, and that's different than truth.
Yeah.
It's self-concocted and it's keeping you separate.
Yeah. And you had the courage to sit with that. And so I really want to applaud that, because that's definitely a place where someone with less commitment to truth would just go right back into defensive story of, no, this is my purpose. This is what I'm doing. You're the one who's lying to me. You're the one who's deceiving me. So I'm out of here. But you stuck with it. It's like, well, maybe I'll look at this. That when she said, pray for truth, you heard her.
I heard her, but that did happen. And I had to go back and say, I've lost my mind. Because the ego did come on and do all those things. And I wanted to go back in time, back to my old life. And then I had to sit with, I had nothing anymore. I had no house. I had no stuff. I had turned my car in. I had nothing, you know. And that here I was again starting over. And it was felt like divorce 2.0, you know, I'm going through it again.
Yeah.
You know, and it took 2 times to get me to the shift I needed to get to.
Yeah. And, you know, that's why the labyrinth, you know, if we bring up the image of a labyrinth, which is different than a maze, a lot of people use the terms maze and labyrinth interchangeably, but a labyrinth actually, it winds you into the center. And just when you think you're there,
yeah,
it takes you all the way back out to the edge again. And then you go back in and you think, oh, I'm there again. And well, nope, I'm all the way back out. And it's a wonderful visual and also physical symbol that we can walk, that we can move, that kind of shows sort of this progress that you're describing, that there are times where we're closer. And even when we're so close and we feel so clear, it's like, oh, I'm there. Then actually something pushes us back out again. And then, so it's that continual journey of returning to center. And, you know, even the smallest thing can push us off. And sometimes it's big things. And that doesn't mean that you didn't have clarity, but that often the closer we get, the more devious the confusion becomes, because it seems to come with such clarity.
It does. It feels so real, you know, and I think it's also as you up level your consciousness, you start to see how deep and unconscious some stuff that's happening in your mind is. And it's the trajectory is just the separation between the two gets bigger and bigger, and you have to be even more able to find it, or more aware or more willing, or, you know.
Yeah. That commitment to truth again. So I think, I mean, even just sharing this story is illustrative for others and might help people see their own reflections within it. But if I don't even know if you feel is there something that encapsulates, is there some wisdom that you feel okay, so this is what I've learned, or are you still just in it? Because I know that this is all relatively fresh. It's relatively new.
Yeah, I mean, it's been about 5 weeks since I've been home from Peru. I stayed and did a second diet after that one that so much insight and clarity came in from. I do want to share I'm not saying any of these things is a fact, or I'm not trying to say this is how it is and this happens to everybody. Like, obviously we don't know any of that, right? Like, this is true for me as much as I can know that it is, and that we don't know everything about the medicine yet. And especially working with this pure toad venom, like, it comes from nature. We know it has this compound that creates this hallucinatory effect, right? But like, what else is in the medicine? We don't know what it is. And too much of anything is not good anymore. And where's the line of too much? It's going to be different for each person.
Yeah.
And like, there's definitely like a sadness in my heart because like the medicine helped me grow so profoundly and infinitely, and it took me as far as it could get me. Like, I do believe that to be true too. And the growth that it helped me with, like, now it's just in different way. It does feel way more embodied than it's ever felt. I feel so grounded now, like, having gotten off the medicine. And things are just clear. They're not confusing, because sometimes on that medicine, sometimes things can be confusing.
Yeah. And I do think it's just very important that you've shared this because this is, it's within the realm of possibility that, as you say, that when we're dealing with toad secretions, it's a place where those who are on the quote unquote natural side of things say, oh, well, there's this wonderful entourage effect that happens from all those other molecules that are in there. And so you're getting this nice synthesis of all these things. And I've kind of taken the position of, but, we don't know that that's kind of an assumption to say that it's a good thing that it has all these other things in
It is
it.
an assumption.
Yeah. And no one's really scientifically studied this of what is the long-term impact of.
We have no clue.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that, like, yeah, obviously me coming on here to talk about this is controversial, and I'm willing to share my story because I think it's important to be talked about. Like, if we're only talking about all the beautiful effects that come from medicine and we're not talking about other possible side effects that happen from it, then that's not truthful.
Yeah, that's not commitment to truth, is it?
That's not a commitment to truth. No. And we just don't know. That's just the fact. We just don't know enough about it, and we're in an era right now of people using psychedelics in a way that they've never been used before, and in frequencies, quantities, and like patterns of using that have never been before. They've not been used this much.
Yeah.
So we don't really know yet what the side effects are going to be. We know how helpful they are in a lot of ways, and they're being used in therapy and healing and this and that, but like, what else?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've come from nature. They're still a psychedelic, and right, what are the potential side effects? We don't know yet.
Yeah. Well, I think that you've done everyone a service in coming on and sharing this story and really allowing yourself to be vulnerable and kind of, share with us places where you've gotten in your own way, places where you've confused yourself, your own process of finding clarity, of finding God, of finding confidence and saying that within yourself and being that within yourself, that it's very beautiful. And in that sense, we as we can always say, well, like, everything's perfect. Doesn't mean everything goes the way you want when you want it. Doesn't
Right.
mean that there isn't discomfort and pain and suffering. But it's all perfect, and especially we can appreciate it from you having gone through it. And now, I believe your fingers are doing better and you're
My
feeling
fingers
better.
are doing better. Yeah, I'm so grateful. This is a rough road.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's not an ending, but it's a happy ending at the moment with where you're at, and it's a value for everyone else to be able to share this.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to be able to share it. And that's all I can do is just be myself. And this is my story.
Yeah. So you're still doing coaching with people?
I am doing coaching. I feel like everything that has happened since I've been home from Peru has like really cemented in the lessons for me to be able to teach everybody, to learn how to trust themselves and to learn how to trust their intuition. You want me to share the story about the car?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Let's get that one.
Okay.
I feel like life in Oakland.
Oh my gosh. Well, like when I was in Oakland or in Peru, I was able to discover that huge pattern with my dad that I saw really fast of like my mind always being in preparation for everything, since I was always criticized and shamed and questioned for everything that I did, that like I saw when I was quiet with my mind, that my mind was always rehearsing conversations that had not yet happened.
Yeah.
And that by me showing up to my dad each time with the rehearsed conversation in my head energetically, I kept recreating the same scenario over and over. And that blew, like that was a big breakthrough for me that really helped me be like, okay, it's my life now. And like really step into my power. And like in that time in Peru at that point, like, you know, this is going back to what you said earlier about like the ego being like, you played for truth, but the ego's like, but what do I do here? And what do I do next? And what am I supposed to do? And I remember asking my questions, those questions to my teacher. And she's like, those are all details. When you commit to your heart, everything else falls in.
Yeah.
So like a couple days into being there, just a real loud one day, mindset coach drops in and I'm like, duh, that's everything I've been doing with the toad anyway. Just take the toad out. And like in that time period, I wrote out a whole website and was like, showed me what to do when I got home. And so that kind of lined that piece up for me, lined up the house for me, it lined up the car for me. And I was like this big energetic upgrade happening in my life. And I had traded in my RAV4 and got myself this 2020 white BMW X1. And I'd never like had such a nice car before. And like part of the insight before I left was that I had like cashed out on all my IRA. So I had money for this big transition in my life. And that was like, trust me, like another trust. Take the money out. It's an illusion of safety. You need it now. You're going to have the money again when you need it. It's like, okay. So I bought the car like straight up and got myself into a new house and got new furniture and got settled down. I was like, okay, everything's like falling into place. And then I took my dog out on a hike one night in the Oakland Hills and was driving through the Oakland Hills. Like it's a nice refuge up there. And, I passed this car. This car had pulled over for me, which felt like weird to my system. Why they pulled over for me, I didn't understand, like a Toyota Matrix. And I passed the Matrix. I'm like, okay, I'll keep going. And like within like one split second, maybe a minute after passing them, this huge white BMW was on the tail of my car, like so fast. I felt like, are they crashing into me? Like what is even happening? And the street goes around this bend and I pull over to an area. They must have this like perfect where you can pull over. And like within one split second, the passenger is getting out of the car in a black ski mask and he has a gun to my head. And like when I was in Peru, I was hearing about the crime in Oakland getting really bad. And then I got the BMW and I was scared about my car everywhere I went. And like I saw like I was running a fear energy. And I'm not saying I created the scenario, but it is important to mention it because I had not run that before. So the guy's getting out of the car with the gun and the mask. And I just remember saying like, are you kidding me, creator? Because like I had been in that own fear experience already. And like, now it's like literally fucking happening. Gun in my head. He's trying to open up my car and the doors are locked. Windows are shut. Sunroof is shut. Like some grace of God right there. And he wants me to get out of the car, roll the window down. I don't know what. He's screaming and yelling at me. And I just remember yelling, I'm trying, but there was just like one very clear direction. And I put my car into reverse. And I ducked down and I slammed on the gas and I just peeled out like maybe I got like 12 feet before I hit the hill. And then in that moment, the driver gets out and I have two men with guns at me. And then that Toyota Matrix that like had let me pass them up the road a few minutes prior comes around the corner, and the two men in the black ski masks get back in their BMW and drive away. And of course, I stopped that car. I said, "Please wait with me. I need to get back to a road with people and not be alone right now." And like was freaking out, crying. And definitely had some PTSD. But the teaching that came through, and it's like, was so profound that I knew I had to go through that scenario. And it's like, A, like I can trust my intuition implicitly all the time, every time. It is one clear voice, and that was what it told me to do. And it's like I did my part, which is intuition and faith, and then God did God's part, which was the car came behind me a couple seconds later. And that like it's always this co-creation between us and God. It's God's not just like, here's everything, have an amazing life. It's like that does not happen. It doesn't work that way. You always have to show up and do your human part. And the human part is the message that you receive without letting your mind talk you out of it. What's the next step? Like, had my mind come in, it'd been like, but then what do I do? What if I can't turn around? What if I crash into another car? Like, if there was time, those were all the things that could have happened with the mind, right? But there was no time. It was one direction. I did exactly what I was supposed to. The car pulled up. My life is saved. The car was saved. I got out of an extremely traumatic situation, which was a complete miracle. And I just learned like it's always a co-creation and the intuition's always right. And you can only take one step at a time. Like faith is a ladder and you go one step at a time and you don't get the next step until you take the first step. So we can't see all ahead. We can only see in this moment. And you do just the right thing in this one moment in faith that the next step is going to show up. So, yeah, it's a big. It was really challenging, obviously, to go through that. And I just like remember like a couple days afterwards just being like, thank you and thanking God for putting me through the situation. Like obviously I was so grateful for my life and it shifted my perspective on everything very fast. But just like I see why I had to go through that and it was really important. And think like please don't ever make me do it again.
Once is enough. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, so I felt like it was really important information for me as I step into my role as a mindset coach. And now that I've taken out the medicine, like it's just me and it's God, and we're co-creating this way for me to share all of the information that I've learned from all my medicine work and through my own test of faith and trust with God, and to help women understand the programs that they're running. And the stories they're running and the patterns and what needs to go back and be healed, forgiven, cleared up, and so they can step into who they're meant to be. And like embody, I know you said earlier, it's kind of silly, but embody their true authentic self because that's why we came to Earth.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Sarah. It's really been a pleasure having you on and having this conversation with you and sharing all of this. And again, allowing yourself to be vulnerable with all of these personal shares. I really appreciate it. I'm sure that the audience appreciates it. And so at this point, if people are curious to reach out to you, to work with you, women in particular, how can people do so?
Yeah, they can find me on saranapik.com. It's Sarahknapik. I'm on Saranapik under Facebook, and you can find me on Instagram as the Little Eagle Woman.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your time today, Sarah.
Thank you so much, Martin. Super grateful for the opportunity.
Well, I'm glad we could do it.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Well, Sarah, we are Just adding a little bit to our prior conversation. So for the listeners out there, I'm just going to check my file. Our previous conversation was held on July 6th. So we are now more than 2 months after that. And kind of where we left in that conversation, Sarah, you had decided that you were going to walk away from serving Toad and working with medicine. And you were looking to build sort of a different identity and a different approach to yourself and your life outside of the realm of serving medicine. And now here we are a little over 2 months later, and now that door is opening back up for you again. So it just felt like we needed to do a little bit of an addendum to our prior conversation as things have shifted again for you. And so I just wanted to invite you to share what that shift has been and how you're negotiating that kind of as we've already been talking today, but the idea of negotiating these changes in your activity while keeping the focus on authentically being yourself without trapping yourself into a particular construct of an identity of either being a medicine woman or not being a medicine woman, as being a life coach or not being a life coach. So what would you want to share with us about this latest development and just a beautiful example of how the process of being oneself is always being negotiated and shifting because it's about being present with what's actually happening, not our ideas of what we think we should be or supposed to be. So that's a whole lot to throw at you as a short question, but I'm sticking by it.
Wow, it's such a great question. And I really think that you said it very clearly of like, how am I coming into my own true authentic self? And I had to do the full two extreme versions to like find this middle point and completely drop the whole identity I had created myself as a medicine woman, all the fans, all the feathers, all the dresses, all of the beaded jewelry, all of the altar cloths. Like I had to give all of that stuff away, let it go, put it to the side and go all the way to this extreme of like, how do I do this work without any of this medicine stuff? How do I teach people about faith and about God and about who they actually are without any of the medicine? And I started showing up that way online and I started talking about God and I started talking about true authentic self and faith. And in this process, I felt like a new rebirth version of myself and also like very different from myself because I was so used to showing up with the bling, the spiritual bling essentially. And there was a point in me like putting out my program to the world that like not a lot was happening with it and I didn't really understand why. And in the same time period, people started reaching out to me to serve the Toad again. And I was saying no, because I had decided no more medicine, I'm doing coaching now. And there was a point of checking in with my teacher where he said, like, they're coming to you because there's something for you to learn in serving medicine. There's something that's not embodied yet for you to do the full teaching. And when I started to weave these two identities back together of Sarah, who she is now, more simple, the coach still connected to the earth and to God and herself. And then also weave back in Sarah, the medicine woman who does have this beautiful tool to offer people to connect back to who they are. When I started weaving these two things back together, the energy shifted instantaneously. And all of a sudden clients started signing up, money started coming in and I embodied more. And what I really had to learn from this experience was like, it doesn't matter what I wear, what I have. Like I gave everything away to actually just find out like it's in my freaking heart. It's not ever going to be outside of me. And it is definitely a struggle with my identity. And it's been a little challenging for me, but it's also like trusting the process that the path is leading us always back to more of actually who we are. And for me having to be like, who am I without my stuff? And I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that. You're exactly who you are without your stuff. and you're exactly who you are with your stuff. Your stuff doesn't make you who you are. And I also think, like, in medicine work, there's like this attachment to the show. There's this attachment to the ceremony. There's an attachment to it being a certain way. And really, at the end of the day, for this specific medicine that we're talking about of toad, it doesn't need any of the bells and the whistles. It just doesn't. It needs somebody who's clear and embodied, who can show up and serve the medicine and hold the space and be there in the most supportive way to support the person who's receiving. And extra rattle or some beaded earrings or a special fan actually has nothing to do with helping someone come back to God.
Yeah. So now I'm kind of swinging through these pendulum-like extremes. I'm curious, would you describe yourself at this point as feeling more at peace or more at home within yourself, regardless of whatever the trappings may be outside, or even regardless of what you're doing, whether it is serving medicine, whether it is coaching work, whether it is helping people? How would you describe how things are feeling inside?
Yeah, I think inside I'm feeling a deeper connection than I have felt yet. A deeper connection that all of my desires, my dreams, and my goals are right here with me, working with me, presenting themselves, as long as I believe that they are, as long as I embody the energy that they are, and that the only thing standing between me and my whole beautiful life that's in my heart is a block, a program, or a misbelief. And that when I can embody faith, then I can show up as who I am in my mission, in the work of my heart, and just help other people embody faith.
Yeah. And, you know, I just want to thank you for being willing to come and share kind of all these different sides of your own story here on the podcast. And I think that it's important to kind of get these highs and get these lows and the trying, the stumbling, the successes, the failures, because, you know, we do live in a world where someone like yourself, a single mom, you need to support yourself. I mean, that's a reality. That's a pressure that we all feel, that we need to, quote unquote, succeed, at least in some capacity, because without money, we can't feed ourselves. We can't clothe ourselves and house ourselves. We can't take care of our kids. You know, it's part of the reality that we live in. So that pressure is always going to be there. And really what I feel that you're kind of helping to show here on the show is that, you know, this quest for personal authenticity, this quest for fulfillment, this quest for purpose and meaning and financial income, that it's hard to juggle all of this. There aren't easy answers. There's not just the one decision or the one experience that just clicks it all in and now everything works. That there's going to be various levels of trying and stumbling and being successful. And then also, you know, as we talked about in our conversation earlier that we have not recorded for this, the idea that sometimes you get in your mind, no, this is what I want to do. But then people come in, they ask you for something else. And it's kind of being open to that. You know, when you say that, well, I don't want to serve medicine, but then people keep asking you, well, will you serve me medicine? So what are we holding on to? And, you know, if we've asked the universe, God, for, you know, please help me support myself, that sometimes it's going to show up not necessarily in ways that we thought we wanted. And
yeah, I think that's where learning how to surrender really comes in, because we can only see things in a certain way based on our past, based on what we already know, what will dictate what we can see that's possible a lot of times. But when I really just said and opened up, like, okay, any way that I could be supported, let it come in. And I'm going to let go of control, that it has to come in exactly how I want it to come in. And like through that, I'm like, I'm held, I'm supported. Like the path is here. Everything's always here. And like, I'm glad you brought up just like the pressure of money and being able to take care of ourselves. And honestly, like so many of the women I talk to, this is the main problem in their lives. And I can so relate, because after I left my marriage, like, I've been trying to find my way. How do I support my kids? How do I support myself in a way that is authentic, in a way that I'm not being miserable waking up and going to a job that I hate? Like, I was not ever willing to entertain that. And it did come to the point where I've, like, as I got closer and closer and closer to the last of my money from everything I had starting to run out, at the same time I'd put this business out there, I've been showing up online, the program's ready for people to come in, like, I'm literally at the point of faith embodiment, and I started being like, have I lost my mind? Is this even possible? What have I done? Oh my God, I have children. Like, what is going to happen to me, you know? And like, getting a little bit freaked out. And like, and then I got all my fears out on paper. I looked at every single one of them. I comforted myself. And then I retold 100 new stories on how beautiful things could be. And then, like, at best of my imagination and ability. And then, like, literally that afternoon, I got my very first pay in full client for my coaching practice with no medicine work. And I'm like, okay, this is getting paid to be me. This is getting paid to heal. So I just want to share, like, if anybody's struggling with money, it's just a mindset shift and some inner child healing work and stuff that needs to be done, and that you can absolutely overcome it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for adding this little bit to the end of our interview. And, you know, I hope that the audience is able to, you know, see their own reflections in kind of this journey of the quest to be oneself, to find support, to find courage, to find that tenacity within yourself, to keep going back to yourself, to keep reflecting, and to go through these processes of letting go, finding trust, and then also being willing to receive what actually is coming our way. And I just want to thank you, Sarah, for, you know, sharing this with the audience, and also for trusting me along in this process with you. We've had so many conversations. I always enjoy speaking with you and, you know, giving a little nudge here or there, a little reflection here or there, that it's really been a pleasure. And I look forward to, you know, as it continues to develop, because it's always a process, right? There's no end point. As long as we're here, as long as we're living, you know, keeps going on. But I just want to say thank you for sharing all that you have.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful to get on here and share my journey. And like you said, like, I hope it can inspire somebody or just have a little nugget of a reflection for somebody.
Awesome. Thanks, Sarah.